Welcome to this ninth podcast on internal communication practice governance, where we can now start to address what may be one of the biggest elephants in the room, both for line managers and possibly for members of your team. Imposter syndrome, which 80% of people admit to suffering from during some parts of their careers. And who knows how many of the other 20% may be simply too scared or ashamed to own up to it, even to themselves, perhaps. And how might the demands on everybody to communicate effectively at work be contributing to this upsetting phenomenon? It would surely be nuts to pretend it never plays a part in at least some people's imposter syndrome. So what can we, as internal communication specialists, do about this? Perhaps even addressing any imposter syndrome we may have ourselves? And how might IC practice governance be able to help with this? Fortunately, we've covered enough ground already in these discussions that we can now start tying some of the pieces together and perhaps get a glimpse of a way forward for everybody's benefit. In the fourth podcast, we explored why the concept of best practice will never be robust enough to support IC practice governance, and that what we need instead is the DFVP model, in which IC practices are demonstrably fit for valid purposes. Then, in the seventh podcast, we arrived at a demonstrably valid purpose for internal communication. And last time, we looked at four key criteria which all need to be DFVP for your team to feel they are good to go. Their business knowledge, the designs of your working practices, the skills with which your people can apply those practices, and their mandate to use their business knowledge, practice designs, and skills. So already perhaps this gives us a framework with which to tackle imposter syndrome within the IC function itself. But how can you tell if within your team those four criteria are or are not currently fit for the demonstrably valid purpose of internal communication? How might you be able to demonstrate that fitness? What criteria would let you know it for sure? There are a couple of ways you could come at this: by looking at the inputs to your practices or the outputs they deliver. Focusing on the inputs to your practices means looking at how valid is the method by which you've designed the practices you're using and are asking other folk to follow. If someone's curious or just plain stubborn, can they see that method? Can they challenge it? If not, why should they take it seriously? And why should your team not be feeling a little vulnerable about it? Interesting, huh? But if you come at it from the perspective of the outputs, you're then asking, to what extent are your current practices fulfilling the employees' needs, and how much better could they do so? Now, perhaps unsurprisingly, we found it most useful to start with the employee needs and work back from there to come up with the method of designing the practices which need to meet them. What may be a little more surprising is that when it comes to imposter syndrome, it seems to be most useful to look at it through the lens of risk management. Now, at first, this may seem counterintuitive, but the reason risk management is such a useful approach is twofold. Firstly, because IC pervades every business activity, it's tricky, if not impossible, to assign credit or blame for a particular business result on this or that particular communication activity, or when it comes to blame, on perhaps any communication activity, because the other moving parts usually involve the human element. Employee performance can be affected by so many other factors. People's personal health, stuff that may be going on at home, changes in their personal aspirations, freak weather events, equipment that's letting them down, and on and on and on it goes. So, as influential as it can be, internal communication, no matter how demonstrably fit for valid purposes it is, cannot be responsible for this plethora of other factors. So Does that not leave IC specialists high and dry? Absolutely not. Because what we can realistically do is look at the risks to employee performance that can be posed by demonstrably unfit IC practices, and then ensure the practices are designed and supported to mitigate or even eliminate those risks. So that inevitably means we need to be asking what factors could create unnecessary risks to employee experience and performance if they were present in an internal communication practice? And what would be the opposites of those factors? What would they look like so we can make sure those opposites are in place instead? Now, so far, we have identified 9 key factors which can mitigate or eliminate those risks. And none of these should come as much of a surprise. They're all pretty obvious, but as always, it's useful to state them out loud, as it were. And to make them easier to remember, these 9 factors make up a handy little acronym, TRACELACE. And as we go through these, you may just want to make a mental note of anything in the way clients or others interact with you or your team, which could be putting any of these TRACELACE criteria at risk. So let's start with the T. The first criterion that needs to be met to avoid adversely affecting employee performance is that all internal communications must be timely, rather than late or buried in so much other noise that they risk being overlooked, because either of those scenarios could mean employees not having all the information they need to do their jobs properly. The second TRACELACE criterion requires internal communications to be relevant, rather than wasting people's time with stuff they don't need and can't use. This is not only because of the cost of that wasted time, it's also because we need to guard against getting in the way of communications they do need to pay attention to. Thirdly, your communications need to be accurate, obviously enough, rather than misleading. Then there's the fourth criterion. You need to do all you can to make your communications clear, rather than vague. Now, of course, clarity is something that can often suffer when people resort to jargon or corporate speak. The next TRACELACE criterion concerns the issue of empathy. This is an interesting one, because to fulfill the purpose of internal communication, its intended audiences have to feel this is talking to me. So I need to act on what's being said here. Otherwise, they might switch off and leave the tasks to other people. If that happens, those communications will have failed with some or all of the people they needed to get through to. So that's the trace part of TRACELACE covered. Now for the lace part. Internal communications need to be logically organized, rather than bouncing people back and forth to find the information they need. This is true of individual communications and applies just as much to campaigns and to the way the intranet, SharePoints, and enterprise social networks are set up. The next criterion concerns the issue of accessibility. There are 2 strands to this. Accessibility in terms of people simply being able to get to the information itself, and there's the question of how accessible the language is for some people, especially if it's a technical subject or you're dealing with employees who are relying on their second or third language to take on board what you're saying. Another thing you have to ensure is that your communications are complete, rather than leaving people to fill in the blanks for themselves. Now, interestingly, this one is kind of a double-edged sword. On the one hand, you can't afford to leave employees dangling with only half a story, but nor can you have managers failing to communicate at all because they themselves don't have a complete picture yet. So in the real world, it may sometimes be necessary to acknowledge the holes in the picture rather than leaving people completely in the dark. And finally, there is the issue of ethics. And this could be affected either by the content of what's being said or the manner in which it's being expressed. To sum up then, these are the traceless criteria we have identified as being necessary to meet, which might be put at risk if any aspect of your team's business knowledge, practice designs, skills, or mandate are anything less than demonstrably fit for valid purposes. All four of those factors need to be set up in such a way that everything your team touches will deliver communications which are always timely, relevant, accurate, clear, empathic, logically organized, accessible, complete, and ethical. Now, we're not saying this list is exhaustive. You know, we are no less prone to blind spots than anyone else. So if you have any suggestions about other criteria we should consider, by all means, get in touch. As a starting point, though, we feel it is a reasonably robust list. And perhaps you've already been able to spot certain things within your team's business knowledge or practice designs or their skills, or perhaps the team's mandate, which are compromising some of the traceless criteria. Or maybe it's not so clear yet. So in our next podcast, we'll revisit these criteria and see how each of them may be affected by your major working practices. As ever, if you don't want to wait till next time, or you're keen to explore more about this subject, you can tap into the dozens of free resources available at comgame.co.uk. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you found this useful. And if you have any questions or there's anything you want to share about what you've just learned, by all means, join us in the IC Practice Governance Group on LinkedIn.